Chapter 50. Not in her nature to busy herself with the fancies of suicide to which disappointed young people are prone. What occupied and exasperated her was the sense that there was nothing for her but to live in a way she hated. She avoided going to the rectory again. It was too intolerable to have to look and talk as if she were compliant. And she could not exert herself to show interest about the furniture of that horrible cottage. Miss Mary was staying on purpose to help, and such people as Jocosa liked that sort of thing. Her mother had to make excuses for her not appearing, even when Anna came to see her. For that calm which Gwendolyn had promised herself to maintain had changed into sick motivelessness. She thought, I suppose I shall begin to pretend by and by, but why should I do it now? Her mother watched her with silent distress, and, lapsing into the habit of indulgent tenderness, she began to think what she imagined that Gwendolyn was thinking, and to wish that everything should give way to the possibility of making her darling less miserable. One day when she was in the black and yellow bedroom and her mother was lingering there under the pretext of considering and arranging Gwendolyn's articles of dress, she suddenly roused herself to fetch the casket which contained the ornaments. Mama, she began, glancing over the upper layer, I had forgotten these things. Why didn't you remind me of them? Do see about getting them sold. You will not mind about parting with them. You gave them all to me long ago. She lifted the upper tray and looked below. If we can do without them, darling, I would rather keep them for you, said Mrs. Davilow, seating herself beside Gwendolyn with a feeling of relief that she was beginning to talk about something. The usual relation between them had become reversed. It was now the mother who tried to cheer the daughter. W.Y., how came you to put that pocket handkerchief in here? It was the handkerchief with the corner torn off which Gwendolyn had thrust in with the turquoise necklace. It happened to be with the necklace I was in a hurry, said Gwendolyn, taking the handkerchief away and putting it in her pocket. Dee don't sell the necklace, Mama, she added, a new feeling having come over her about that rescue of it which had formerly been so offensive. No, dear, no, it was made out of your dear father's chain. And I should prefer not selling the other things. None of them are of any great value. All my best ornaments were taken from me long ago. Mrs. Davilow colored. She usually avoided any reference to such facts about Gwendolyn's stepfather as that he had carried off his wife's jewelry and disposed of it. After a moment's pause she went on, and these things have not been reckoned on for any expenses. Carry them with you. That would be quite useless, Mama, said Gwendolyn, coldly. Gee, governesses don't wear ornaments. You had better get me a gray frieze livery and a straw poke, such as my aunt's charity children wear. No, dear, no, don't take that view of it. I feel sure the Momperts will like you the better for being graceful and elegant. I am not at all sure what the Momperts will like me to be. It is enough that I am expected to be what they like, said Gwendolyn bitterly. If there is anything you would object to less, anything that could be done instead of your going to the bishop's, do say so, Gwendolyn. Tell me what is in your heart. I will try for anything you wish, said the mother, beseechingly. Dee don't keep things away from me. Let us bear them together. Oh, Mama, there is nothing to tell. I can't do anything better. I must think myself fortunate if they will have me. I shall get some money for you. That is the only thing I have to think of. I shall not spend any money this year. You will have all the £80. I don't know how far that will go in housekeeping. But you need not stitch your poor fingers to the bone, and stare away all the sight that the tears have left in your dear eyes. Gwendolyn did not give any caresses with her words as he had been used to do. She did not even look at her mother, but was looking at the turquoise necklace as she turned it over her fingers. Bless you for your tenderness, my good darling, said Mrs. Davilow, with tears in her eyes. Dee don't despair, because there are clouds now. You are so young. There may be great happiness in store for you yet. I don't see any reason for expecting it, Mama, said Gwendolyn, in a hard tone, and Mrs. Davilow was silent, thinking as he had often thought before, had it happened between her and Mr. Grandcourt. I will keep this necklace, Mama, said Gwendolyn, laying it apart, and then closing the casket. Be but do get the other things sold, even if they will not bring much. Ask my uncle what to do with them. I shall certainly not use them again. I am going to take the veil. I wonder if all the poor wretches who have ever taken it felt as I do. Don't exaggerate evils, dear. How can anyone know that I exaggerate, when I am speaking of my own feeling? I did not say what anyone else felt. She took out the torn handkerchief from her pocket again, and wrapped it deliberately round the necklace. Mrs. Davilow observed the action with some surprise, but the tone of her last words discouraged her from asking any question. The healing Gwendolyn spoke of with an air of tragedy was not to be explained by the mere fact that she was going to be a governess. She was possessed by a spirit of general disappointment. It was not simply that she had a distaste for what she was called on to do. The distaste spread itself over the world outside her penitentiary, since she saw nothing very pleasant in it that seemed attainable by her, even if she were free. Naturally, her grievances did not seem to her smaller than some of her male contemporaries held theirs to be when they felt a profession too narrow for their powers, and had an a priori conviction that it was not worth while to put forth their latent abilities. Because her education had been less expensive than theirs, it did not follow that she should have wider emotions or a keener intellectual vision. Her griefs were feminine, but to her as a woman they were not the less hard to bear, and she felt an equal right to the Promethean tone. But the movement of mind which led her to keep the necklace, to fold it up in the handkerchief, and rise to put it in her necessaire, where she had first placed it, when it had been returned to her, was more peculiar, and what would be called less reasonable. It came from that streak of superstition in her which attached itself both to her confidence, and her terror, a superstition which lingers in an intense personality even in spite of theory and science, any dread or hope for self being stronger than all reasons for or against it. Why she should suddenly determine not to part with the necklace was not much clearer to her than why she should sometimes have been frightened to find herself in the fields alone. She had a confused state of emotion about Deronda. Was it wounded pride and resentment, or a certain awe and exceptional trust? It was something vague and yet mastering, which impelled her to this action about the necklace. There is a great deal of unmapped country within us which would have to be taken into account in an explanation of our gusts and storms. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.